Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This is Nate Klarfeld, and this is Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. My guest tonight is Denny Hammond, a retired veterinarian from Milwaukee who now lives kind of all over the place. We'll talk about that soon. He's a composer. He's an author, playwright. He's written musicals, songs, country western. I mean, the list goes on. Half hour isn't going to cover it. You know that. So, without any other problems here, here's Denny Hammond. Hey, Denny. Good evening.
Good evening to you. You're coming through fine.
Good. Now that when we were warming up a little while ago, and I don't think the lines are open, or they give me enough bandwidth to talk to people. Denny, it's a pleasure having you on your show. We're gonna talk about a book because I'm a book guy. Denny's written a book called Purple Grass. Denny, tell us how Purple Grass came to be.
Oh, it's been sitting on my bookshelf for about 20 years. When I first came out to California, Reverend Freda Smith is a minister in Sacramento at the MCC Church, and she's got a trademark sermon that she gives called Purple Grass. It's a short sermon about a lost little lamb being rejected by the flock because the lamb likes purple grass. And I was inspired to pick up on the idea and transform a sermon into a book that's about 285 pages with lots of characters and lots of detours and streets that cover the little lamb and his struggle because he likes purple grass and lives in a flock that shuns him.
Uh-huh. And the lamb is, of course, a metaphor for?
It's for anybody who doesn't fit into the flock. You know, the main thing probably would be gay people because they don't fit in. But it can be anybody, be you somebody who's overweight, who's a geek, somebody who's not the football captain. You just don't fit in, and you don't know what to do with your life.
I'm going to talk about that in a little while, the not fitting in, even in the gay community, the people that don't fit in the gay community. We stratify and make our own lives even more miserable sometimes. Isn't that right?
Correct. The inspiration to get this published, like I said, it's been sitting on my bookcase for 20-some-odd years, the story I read about this young man jumping off of the bridge because he got outed in college. And I just thought, this is such a tragedy for people to think that this is the solution for the challenge that they're having in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, I believe it was Tyler Clementi. Was that the Tyler Clementi story, or was it the other one?
It's the college student that his roommate took a video cam of him having sex
Tyler
in the bedroom.
At Rutgers University, Tyler Clementi. It was about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. It was a while ago.
About a year and a half ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was really, and then I guess that was right at the beginning of when, have you made an It Gets Better video for my friend Dan Savage? You should.
I've heard about it, yes.
Okay, well,
I haven't done it yet.
Well, you know what? After reading all about you and watching your Channel 4 News thing, I don't know how savvy you are with a video camera, but I think you'd be there's hundreds of I think there's tens of thousands of them now. Everyone from Barack Obama to Laura Bush Jr. Laura Bush did one. Jenna Bush, Barbara Bush did one. The McCain kids did them. I really think you should do one and put some of your experiences into it. Go to YouTube and It Gets Better. I really think you should do it. It'd be fun. Anyway, back to the stuff. Okay.
Sure.
Back to the stratification, because that was a big part of the book. There was a secondary story in the book. There's like five or six different characters of all sheep, of course. All lost sheep. We're all lost sheep. Anyway, you bring up AIDS obviously in the book. You call it the rumen flu, is that right? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
No, I call it the wasting disease. And as a veterinarian, I'm aware of a lot of things that go on in the animal kingdom.
Right.
And sheep do have a condition called the wasting disease. It's not a viral condition. It's actually due to a selenium deficiency in the diet. But it causes muscle deterioration and mental challenges, and the sheep die.
Yeah. Well, First of all, my question is, if, you know, you drew the parallel in there. You said you did, now I think you answered your question when you said that my question I had is that you said it's been on the shelf for 20 years, and obviously 20 years ago, HIV was a big deal, and now it's more into like teen suicide and gay marriage. HIV has kind of taken a backseat in the gay community. Have you felt that out in California too?
Well, I've been involved with the AIDS Network for. Oh, I'm getting a feedback here.
Uh-oh. Okay, better now?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
That's no, I'm still getting a feedback.
Okay, it's not on my end. My end is fine. Let me turn off. Is that better right there?
Well, yeah, that's not good.
Okay.
No, it did, but I'll continue talking and hear myself echoing in the background.
It's not coming through on the broadcast. I'm hearing the broadcast.
Okay, so then it's the echo on my end for whatever reason.
What, something's going on, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
So it sat on my bookcase for 20 years after I wrote it. And like I said, I just felt I should get it out there, and fortunately it's been published. It's on Amazon.com and Kindle and Barnes & Noble. And now I'm wanting to get it in the hands of people who want to read it, who feel that this is important in their life.
Really? So how have you been promoting the book?
It just got published in October. Uh-huh. I've been going to libraries. I've been giving a lot of books away to people in Out Magazine for their review. I seem to have trouble getting it past the front desk of uh-huh. places. You're sending it to places like Oprah and Ellen DeGeneres. Never heard back from them. Putting it on my Facebook, email to people, just getting in touch with anybody whose name that I can connect with and sending them a book.
Yeah, I've heard this from authors the last 8 or 9 years. It seems like they get the book out, even if it's, you know, no matter who the publisher is, no matter what, if it's not like a Harry Potter or, you know, Hillary Clinton's memoirs, you really just have to hit the bricks. Isn't that right?
And that was the advice I got from a lady I met at a birthday party this weekend. She's got a book in the top seller list. And she says, you just have to be persistent and keep knocking on doors and pushing.
And, you know, let me just give you a very small piece of advice. And I could be just dead wrong on this, but somebody told me about this once. Rather than sending things to Oprah and Ellen DeGeneres, you can find out from reading their books that they've published who their agent is or who their publicist is. They always put them in the acknowledgments of it. Actually they put themselves in the acknowledgments, I found out, but that's how you find a wedge to get into people's lives. Is you kind of work their egos and you go through their publicist or their agent, and they always thank their agent in their prologue or acknowledgments. It's kind of a trick I learned. I don't remember. I think Edmund White told me that, because I think that's how he got his agent like 40, 50 years ago. He went and found, I don't remember what other gay writer, it may have been Gore Vidal. I think he told me it was Gore Vidal, and he went and found a Gore Vidal book by Gore Vidal, and who he thanked in the beginning, and then looked him up in the New York phone book, because there was no internet then. So I'm just giving you that advice, and if there's any other authors out there, you can take it for what it's worth. I'm just a channel here.
Well, I appreciate any input that comes my way. I've also sent it to places like PFLAG and other organizations that deal with gay people, gay rights. This author I was talking with over the weekend told me, she says, you don't find Oprah, she finds you.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that, but you never know. You know, what is if you're the one? Of course, now she's off the air, so you'd have to go to the OWN network or something. But you're right. You you can't ever give up. It's like you know, a manuscript. You know, it's like, I don't know how many times did. Okay, here's another good question for all the other authors to be out there. How many rewrites did you do for Purple Grass? Honest.
I turned it over to an editor for her to redline it, and this was 20 years ago, and then we sat down over coffee, and I would argue with her how important my writing was, and she made me aware how important an editor is to get rid of my redundancy and to get to the point.
Right, yeah, and stay on point, you know, right, I understand. But
you know,
in
terms of rewrites, I would just sit down, and the story unfolded.
Really?
When I reread this after 20 years, I thought, holy cow, this is really good stuff. It's an easy read. It starts out like a Walt Disney movie with little lambs, buddies. Chubby Chipmunk is a compulsive overeater. Bumbly Bumblebee is an alcoholic that drinks fermented nectar out of red flowers and falls down and crawls home because he doesn't want to lose his pilot's license. And Mona Monarch is a cross-dresser who changes her wings every time the wind blows.
So, you've just
it's got some very cute things in it.
So, didn't mean to interrupt. So you now have just described the first five stools in every gay bar, right?
Yes. Yes.
The five stools are there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They're there at 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
Correct.
We're bad, aren't we? No, it's true though. I mean, we do have a lot of issues in our community. And one of the things that I'm glad we talked about right at the beginning was this is not necessarily about gay and straight. This is about anyone that doesn't fit in, whether they're the only, you know, whether they're overweight or have HIV or have a short height problem or a too tall problem. Okay, let's talk about the sheep's moral code in the book, okay? It seems like the moral code came from nowhere, like it was genetically programmed into the sheep, because obviously, you know, we're supposed to think this is the animal kingdom. Of course, you know, we know it's an allegory or a metaphor, but, you know, being a veterinarian and being in the medical world and seeing genetics and behavior bred into animals, do you think some homophobia is just genetic and is just going to be there?
There's a song from South Pacific about you've got to be carefully taught.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our beliefs and value systems come from what people around us tell us, be it parents, the minister in your church, a friend. And it's really hard if you're a gay person and you've been raised in an environment that says you're going to go to hell. And that's what I try to address in Purple Grass, the fallacy of the leaders who's supposed to have all the answers, and we believe them, and we never try it out and trust. Is this work for me?
Right, exactly. And it just kind of seems like it seems like it's not only what we do see, you know, what we're carefully taught, but what we're carefully not taught, what we don't see. We don't see, you know, normal gay couples working hard, raising a family, you know, paying the mortgage, things like that. That's not who 80% of America sees. I mean, they see the popular culture gays until recently, and they've been pretty stereotyped into a non mainstream kind of way. I mean, you don't really see a Ward and June Cleaver as a, you know, Ward and Willie Cleaver. And until that happens, I think it's not only what you're carefully taught, but what you're carefully not shown. What's left out is as important as what's added. Yeah, that's true. Okay, great.
The thing that I had written in author's notes, I just want to mention on this. You know, I was married for 20 years. And I tried so hard not to be gay.
Uh-huh.
And therapy didn't work. Laying on religious hands didn't work. And I had read about aversion therapy. It can be either electroshock or what I was going to try is a drug called apomorphine. This is something that will make you vomit. And I would use it in my veterinary practice for dogs that ate something that they shouldn't have. And it's a quick way to empty the stomach. And I had read if you give yourself a shot of apomorphine while you're watching porn, that will condition you because you'll be throwing up with porn, and you won't do that anymore. But I did read later on that some people that get this get cardiac fibrillation, and they need the shock paddles. And I thought, that's the last thing my kids need to find is their dad dead in the clinic bathroom with an empty syringe and gay porn. And that was that point, I just thought, I can't keep running from these feelings anymore. I was born this way. They're part of me, and I need to accept and embrace that, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. This is who I am. And that's been the quest I've been on for the last 25 years, just finding great joy in who I am, and this is who I was created to be, and wrote Purple Grass to try to reach people who struggle with their sense of identity.
Right. You sent me a clip about... I think it was a local newscast in Milwaukee, a Channel 4 newscast. You sent it to me this morning, this afternoon. And in it, by the way, do you remember what year that was?
Oh, that would have been about 1982 or 83.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it's 20, 30, almost 30 years old.
Correct.
Old. Great. So that's when your awakening or your epiphany or whatever happened. By the way, you make a hot cowboy in that picture.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You take compliments where they come from. Anyway, what I want to talk about is you gave up everything, bought a bus. Tell us about the bus. The bus is like too cool. I'm going to put the link to that YouTube on my webpage, on my Facebook page as soon as we're done here because I loved it. Tell us about the bus, please.
Let me just back up a little bit. When I was in vet school, I had told a classmate that I could be successful by listening to people talk, that nobody listens anymore. And he told me that I was a fraud. That's not what we're in veterinary school for. I said, but that's what I think the people need. I was very happy when I would see about five or six people a day. And when I would close the exam room door, my receptionist would tell people in the waiting room, you're going to be a while, Dr. Hammond is talking. And I would listen to everything people had to tell me, their family, their marriages, their kids, sure, their struggles. And I grew, and I got to be so successful, and I didn't like it.
Uh-huh.
I had a big staff, and I was in the top 10% of the veterinary practices, and I didn't enjoy success. And I thought, who do I want to be? Uh-huh. And I just decided that I had to cut loose. I lived my dream. I always wanted to be a veterinarian. Now who do I want to be when I hit my mid-40s crazies? Uh-huh. And I put out a notice to a new buyer was coming, and the director of Channel 4 in Milwaukee said, this is a news story. Can we document you? And uh-huh. He came out and shot the video that you saw on my news clip.
Right.
And I had bought this 1953 flexible bus. It used to be a tour bus for a rock band in Milwaukee. Called my bus Pegasus. This was going to be my magic steed that was going to take me to my dreams. I sold everything I had. I didn't want to have any responsibilities anymore. I wanted to fly and discover who lived inside of me. Who was I created to be? And that's been the journey I have been on, and it's been a wonderful, I have no regrets, none whatsoever. And I lived in my bus for a year, and then I found out I need some place to put my stuff. And so now I end up having a home here in Guerneville, California, which is a gay resort community, and I spend my winters in Fort Lauderdale, which is a nice gay place. I decided I need to be around people who are like me, so I have the freedom to be me and not worry about any repercussions.
That's exactly right. That's why that was my choice to moving to Fort Lauderdale. It has pluses and minuses, and I wanted to back up a little bit about the medical stuff, because it's really obvious when you read Purple Grass that you're in the medical field, the way you talk about regurgitating and all the other stuff. Did you have fun doing that? Did you really have fun? It looks like you had a lot of fun writing this.
Well, I've been told I paint a picture for words, and you know, some of the scenes, you know, when I read them, I thought, oh my gosh, that's pretty gross. Because you can actually see it and feel it and smell it, whatever is going on.
Right. Yeah, most of our listeners know that I'm a retired dentist, so absolutely nothing can gross me out as far as reading about it or seeing it or smelling it. So to me, it was just fun. It was just fun to read. Okay, next question. Actually, this is coming from the chat room, one of our anonymous people, which is great. You said you found yourself, or you were looking for yourself. Who did you want to be? Did you have any professional help, therapist, counselor, mentor?
I've gone through a lot of therapy, and therapy was helpful. It made me aware of my feelings. One of the early things the therapist said is, Denny, how do you feel about this? And I discovered I really wasn't in touch with what my feelings were. Another person who helped me, and I mentioned this in my book, was Jim Morningstar. He ran the School of Spiritual Psychology in Milwaukee. And he made me aware there's a bigger world out there with a kinder creator that I had never believed existed before, that made a fantastic world, and I had every right to be part of it. He made me aware of the energy in trees and things that I didn't learn in Sunday school. So that was a great help to be on a spiritual journey as well.
Mm-hmm. So you did have good guidance. I guess the question was if you had any professional, like psychiatry or psychologist, that where you had the aha moment in their office. Many people believe they're going to get that on the psychiatrist's couch or in the therapist's office. It looks like you found yours on your own with just some little nudges, right?
Well, a quote I like is, when you ask the question properly, the answer will appear, or the teacher will appear.
Yeah, I've read that somewhere. Yeah, that's great. Okay, back to the psychiatrist story. My husband is a Freudian-trained psychiatrist that doesn't have a bad Viennese accent like Dr. Sheepshrink does in your book. I read those aloud to him, and he just cringed. You have no idea how a classically trained psychiatrist. that is like one of the worst stereotypes. People think that you're going to have the Viennese accent, you're going to have a couch and a goatee and say, a lot.
Well, Dr. Sheepshrink really is more like a Nazi who is persecuting. He's got more of a German accent. And, you know, he's like a Gestapo officer to the poor little lamb.
That's the way I read it, but he read it as you're making fun of all the Freudian psychiatrists, and I just wanted you to know that you might have some of them gunning for you. No, I'm just kidding. In fact, my partner is from Dallas. He was the gay psychiatrist in Dallas for 25 years, and he's got one of these drawls that just goes on, and you just kind of want to say, hurry up, keep talking, you know, but no, he's anything but a Freudian-looking psychiatrist. But it did sound to me like it was more like the old psychiatry from the 40s and 50s, where they did the aversion therapy and the electroshock therapy and the chemical castration, right? Isn't that what was done?
Correct.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Okay. Okay.
One of the things I learned as a veterinarian is there are good veterinarians, and I felt I was a very good veterinarian, but there's also some very bad veterinarians, and there are some very bad therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists out there. Uh-huh. And if any of your listeners are going to somebody who is telling them that they are wrong,
mm-hmm.
get out of the office right away.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
because
good.
There are those people out there, just like there are bad veterinarians, there are bad therapists who are going to hurt you far more.
Right.
And likewise, the people in some of this reborn Christian community, where you can be changed. My experience is, this is who I am, and the sooner I accepted that, the more I could discover the happiness in the life that I'm living.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost like when you cross over to the other side. Once you've come out and accept yourself, and you're just your life, your shoulders, you stand straighter, you smile, you see the sky, you see the grass, and you say, "Where was I all those years?" That was my experience. I also was married. I also came out later in life, and so I share those experiences. I'd like to talk about the musicals right now.
Sure.
One of the ones that has been performed, I believe you said 42 times all across the country, is a tribute to the memory of you. Am I getting the name of that
That's
right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Tell us about what that's about, please.
It's the coming out story of a young gay man who is raised in a fundamentalist religious family who struggles to please his father, and there is no pleasing this person. He goes off to college, falls in love with someone in college. Then they have a wonderful life. He's rejected by his father and the family and the church. He has nightmares about it. His lover ends up coming down with AIDS. His lover dies in his arms on the stage, which is a real tearjerker. And then there's a father-son reconciliation that makes everybody cry.
Huh? Great, great. It's almost like a Greek tragedy.
It's had great reviews. It was labeled as a must-see musical, but I haven't been able to find anybody who would pick up this kind of subject matter. I've been told the music is very good. It sticks with you. People came back to see it multiple times, and they would bring their father. A psychiatrist brought a father who had rejected his son, who ultimately died and committed suicide, to see the musical as part of his therapy.
Ah, ooh, it's good to have therapy, but it's painful. Sometimes therapy is painful. That's great. You did send me, you were very, very gracious and sent me your musicals, and I had a ball watching them, and I don't understand production and promotion of anything like that, and I know it takes an incredible amount of luck and money. I think those are the two things, and I don't know if it's prayer, luck, and money, but... I've just seen some terrible things on the stage that have been produced and lost hundreds of millions of dollars. And then you find something good and it just doesn't seem to, but I do want to thank you for writing those. Those are great. Okay. The Dreamcatcher. That's your new one. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
That was fun. You sent me that one too. Denny was very generous. I have a whole Denny Hammond collection at home. Tell us what the Dreamcatcher is about, please.
A little history on that. A producer saw a tribute to the memory of you. He loved the music. He says, your stuff is great, but nobody's going to want to come to see gay guys struggling with life. Why don't you write a story about a kid who's HIV? Nobody's ever done that before.
No,
and that's what the Dreamcatcher is about. It's about an 8-year-old boy who was born HIV, living with an alcoholic, drug-using mom who no longer wants her son. And it's about how do you live your dreams when everybody around you tells you you have no future.
Right. I love that.
The one thing that I explored more, when I first wrote Tribute, I found out the word G-O-D has a lot of negative connotations for people in terms of spirituality.
Right.
The Dreamcatcher is that circular hoop that is a Navajo or one of the American Indian traditions that you hang on the wall and it captures all of your dreams.
Right.
And the nightmares get melted in the morning sun and the good dreams are there for you to capture. To me, that's the concept of this creator, this bigger something out there that holds all of your dreams. And they're there for you to take home. All you need to do is ask and reach for them.
Right, and believe that they're there, and believe they're there, yeah.
Correct, and keep believing.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Looking back on my life, I have lived every dream I have ever wanted to live. It's not always been by the path I thought it should be or in my timetable, but historically, it's happened.
Well, that's one in a million, because you don't hear people have, many people have lived their dreams, but they don't realize it, and they don't have the gratitude that you do. Many people have their dreams handed to them and throw them away. And you seem to have not only lived your dreams, but you're aware and grateful. And that's a delightful thing to hear from somebody at any point in their lives, but especially someone who's accomplished as much as you have. We have 1 minute remaining. This half hour just flew by. I swear I just sat down and turned this thing on. What do you have to say? What's your last words to our audience?
The journey in life should be to discover happiness. And for me, happiness is to find everything at night before you go to bed to be grateful for. Somebody who smiled at you, a friend who gave you a hug, or the sun that shone on you that day. If you can find something to be grateful for, you will find happiness.
Great. Listen, flyingpegasus.com, FlyingPegasus.com is where you can find out more about Dr. Denny Hammond. His book, Purple Grass, is available on Kindle through Amazon.com, also a paperback trade. A trade paperback book is also available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, so make sure you pick one up. It's a great gift. It's also a fun thing to read. I'm just telling you, it will not take you more than 2 hours, but you're going to read it again. You're going to hand it to people. I would like to say that mine is in front of me, but I loaned it to someone, and they didn't give it back. But that's okay. It's out there. Denny, your energy is out there. Anyway, this is in a few moments, this podcast will be available for download, so you can tell your friends that missed this live I can tell you that we get a lot of people that contact me afterwards. But if you go to the blogtalkradio.com, Stonewall Live. Thank you very much, Denny, and good night.
Thank you, Nate. Good night to you.